This is NHL Radio.
Looking way inside the National Hockey League, this is NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Bill Clement, and we're coming to you from the NHL store, powered by Reebok. We're live, and we're on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and Sirius 208, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll take your calls. We'll be joined later by Dave Ogren, who is the executive director of USA Hockey. And Bill, how are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. I actually got to sit in your chair today.
How did it feel? It felt warm when I got here.
Yeah, I was warming it up for 2 hours. It was a little big for me because Don LaGreca had been here all week long. I already gave it to him once.
That is a low blow. Mr. LaGreca does not deserve that cheap shot.
I'm just stirring the pot for when he comes back and when I join him next time.
No, it sounds like there's not enough oxygen in the studio, and somehow being here too long has deprived you of your senses.
Yeah. So is this Dress Down Thursday? I don't think you've ever arrived dressed in denim to the show.
I'm about to get on a plane and go somewhere, and I actually went through a construction site this morning. We took a tour of the new Yankee Stadium, and I didn't see any reason to be dressed up since I know they're still working on it. By the way, it's very, 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 very nice. Nobody should conclude that the Winter Classic has been assigned there yet, just so we can get the speculation. But we were invited by the nice people at the New York Yankees to have a look around. And I'm a big fan of new stadiums and arenas, and I was very interested to see what it was all about. And it is extraordinary. It's really nice. People are going to love it.
Did the subject of the Winter Classic come up,
or
did you at least?
Obviously, that's the reason they invited us.
Okay, now we're getting someplace.
But this was extremely preliminary. We haven't yet begun to focus on exactly who the most likely places or candidates are going to be. The obvious list is out there, but this isn't to suggest we're at the embryonic stage would be an exaggeration in terms of how much we've done.
It's a glimmer.
Not even a glimmer.
Okay.
Glimmer is already formed on some basis.
So would you tell me where you're going on the plane, or would you have to kill me?
I'm actually spending the day tomorrow with the Florida Panthers.
They got something good going on right now.
They have something good going on, and, you know, I typically try to get to at least spend the day with every club. Some years I'm more successful than others. Sometimes I leave teams for the playoffs, and then they don't make it, so you know how good my prognostication is. But in a given year, I'll make it. I'll spend 25 of these days where I'll go, and I'll spend the day with the organization. I'll meet with the local media, meet with sponsors, season ticket holders, and go to the game. And the Panthers are playing, I think, the Rangers tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm heading down shortly after we finish the show.
Find out if they're going to sign Jay Bomeister, and we'll break it on the show next week, will you? Okay, if they can get him signed?
I'm not about breaking news. I'm about
from breaking.
I'm not so good at that. Although I would like to keep rumors in the form of news, which really isn't news from breaking. But no, this is about nice chats with
sure.
our fans, not about hard news. I don't purport to be a journalist.
Well, call me and I'll break it then.
Are you a journalist?
No, but I'll break a story if I know I've confirmed it.
Oh, so you're a would-be journalist.
Well, I know how to confirm leads and sources and stories so that they're valid by the time they come out of my mouth. Otherwise, I frame it as a rumor. Why do I feel like we're getting ready for the shameless plugs?
No, not shameless plugs.
Oh, it's not time for that yet. No, I'm not talking about this, but that's one of the segments of our shows. That's how you lead into that segment. This is our shameless plug moment.
Well, at least I'm not calling them shameful plugs like I did last week. These are what I call points of information, although some might consider them plugs. Did you know, and I hope our listeners know, if they didn't, they'll know now, that the second annual Hockey Weekend Across America which is a nationwide initiative led by USA Hockey, will take place this weekend. This is, for those who don't know it, a nationwide initiative aimed at two major objectives with a weekend of events at local and national levels to promote hockey, of all things. That's why I'm plugging it. The first objective is to celebrate our game and everybody involved in our game throughout the United States, using all means possible. It's really just an attempt for us to raise the visibility of the game in conjunction with USA Hockey and hockey at all levels. And the second is to provide opportunities for those who haven't played hockey to try it, which hopefully will get more people involved at all levels. And USA Hockey is obviously spearheading this effort, which is why Dave Ogren will be on later with us. Actually, a lot of people may not even know what USA Hockey is, and we'll explain that later. Tomorrow...
Just let me say how far-reaching this is, though, because I did a little bit of homework on it today, and everybody thinks of traditional hockey markets, so you can imagine that hockey weekend across America is going to be really revved up in the hockey markets. But everywhere from Anchorage, Alaska, to Fredericksburg, Virginia, to Albuquerque, New Mexico, I mean, you pick a spot, pick a city, there will be something going on about the sport of hockey, an event in that town, and it's far more, it's got a greater reach than I thought it even had. I was like, wow.
By the way, there are those, particularly in the traditional media, in traditional places, who tend to underestimate the reach of our game. Hockey is everywhere, and it is for everybody, which will segue to that this is Diversity Month, but I'm not there yet. As part of Hockey Weekend Across America, Friday is Wear Your Jersey Day. You know, I'm wearing jeans. We can wear our jerseys tomorrow.
You're going to get 30 jerseys on.
No.
Layers. Layers.
You wear it to school, wear it to a friend's house, wear it everywhere, but let's show spirit in terms of supporting the game by wearing jerseys. And I'm not just talking NHL jerseys, as much as I'd like everybody to wear an NHL jersey. High school jersey, college jersey, rec league jersey, just wear a jersey. And in conjunction with Friday's Wear Your Jersey Day, Reebok, who's our terrific partner, who powers this store and who makes the sweaters that our players wear during our games, is sponsoring the entire weekend and is offering fans an opportunity to win one of 45 of our Edge Authentic NHL jerseys, 15 per day for each of 3 days of the weekend, starting tomorrow. And there's a special website that you go to participate, and it is the HockeyWeekendAcrossAmerica.com website. And there are no spaces, so and as spelled as you would think, HockeyWeekendAcrossAmerica.com. Saturday is Bring a Friend to the Rink Day. Sounds like the appropriate thing to do on Valentine's Day. Haven't asked you how you're spending your Valentine's Day, but...
Dinner reservations made about a month ago.
I made them 3 days ago, but that's
still
another
works.
Story.
It's all right.
Well, only if you get lucky or you know the major D. In any event, you should take a friend to an open skate, to a youth game, to a college game, a professional game. Just do whatever to bring somebody, perhaps your Valentine, to see your favorite sport, namely hockey. Sunday is Celebrate Local Hockey Heroes Day, in which communities can honor or should honor a favorite coach, timekeeper, official, player, somebody who deserves recognition and has been a part of the game. And the NHL, the American Hockey League, the ECHL, the NCAA, the U.S. Hockey League, the North American Hockey League are all participating in this. So
how good is that?
That's really
wow.
Good. And USA Hockey, as I mentioned before, is something we'll talk about. It happens to be the governing body, the national governing body for hockey in the United States. It doesn't govern us, but that's a different story. Hockey Weekend Across America is also pretty timely this time of the year, or at this particular time this year, because we're exactly 1 year from the opening of the Winter Olympics ice hockey competition, which will be on February 16th, 2010. And so we're all looking forward to being in Vancouver for the Olympics. And also, when it comes to U.S. hockey, there are two remarkable storylines for the 2010 Olympics. Number one is the 30th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice in Lake Placid, and it's also the 50th anniversary of the mini Miracle on Ice, which was Squaw Valley in 1960 when the United States won the gold medal. But Dave Ogren, who is the executive director of USA Hockey, will be with us later, And as I mentioned before, in the diversity context, this is also Hockey is for Everyone Month. And I'd like to draw attention to some of the activities that are being conducted in conjunction with that effort. One, Willie O'Ree and Tony McKegney, both former players and NHL ambassadors, will join Darren Banks at the 5th Annual Hockey in the Hood Tournament in Detroit. This is the largest urban youth hockey tournament in the country, and it brings together over 400 NHL diversity youth hockey participants. And if you want more information on that, you know, websites are great. There are now websites for everything. www.detroithockey.org. And on Saturday, Scott Gomez of the Rangers will conduct a clinic for ice hockey in Harlem at the Wollman Rink in Central Park. And this will include skating instruction, hockey instruction, and a sled hockey demo. So there is hockey everywhere, grassroots levels throughout the United States for this special weekend and for Diversity Month.
Hockey including a major rivalry game, Sunday, 12:30 Eastern. And I don't know if it's the biggest New York Rangers rivalry. I doubt that it is because the Islanders have been rivals of the Rangers forever. But I'll guarantee you it's the biggest rivalry that the Flyers have. Philadelphia and the New York Rangers at 12:30 Eastern on NBC.
You get very focused on all things Philadelphia. Why do we think that is?
Because they're on NBC, 12:30 on Sunday. So, I mean, other than that.
That is a shameful plug. Shall we go to the calls?
Yeah, let's do that.
Why don't we start with David in Massachusetts? You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
Good, good. I just like to say what a nice job that you're doing with the criticism, the Canadian criticism that every team on the planet should move to Hamilton, Ontario, and Winnipeg, Manitoba. I think it's extremely short-sighted for the Canadian press, and I understand it's, you know, that's the number one sport there. But, I mean, I just don't understand that it's so short-sighted that, I mean, you know, teams in these markets like Phoenix and Miami, it's only to the benefit, in my eyes, I see, for those teams to, for the sport of hockey to succeed as a whole. I mean, if you have to move teams in those type of markets, then, you know, where is the sport going?
You know, I've heard what you have just said a number of times from people, and I think that there are two ways to look at it. One, I don't think it's fair or appropriate to pick on segments of the Canadian media or people who believe that maybe we should have more franchises in Canada, because Canadians are as passionate about our game as anybody could be about anything in the world.
And I do agree with you, but wouldn't you agree that there is?
Well, I was going to get to the second part of what I was going to say. I think that with respect to hockey in the Sun Belt or non-traditional markets, it's very easy for some people to take a short-term snapshot. But to compare franchises that have been in existence a decade and a half, 10, 15 years, to franchises that have been around in some cases 100 years, in other cases 30 or 40 years, is a little unfair. And really, are you going to be focused on this game as a short-term matter and say, how are things today in every place? Or do you have a longer-term vision about the ongoing growth of the game? And I believe that for any business and for this game, you need to have a long-term vision. And our long-term objectives and our long-term vision is being supported in lots of places we've never been before. And I believe the future in these markets is ultimately going to be very strong and very bright.
Well said.
Well, that's nice of you
to say. But that doesn't mean that you wouldn't. Listen, if relocation had to occur, or if you happen to decide that expansion was appropriate at a certain point, would you evaluate
absolutely
all cities equally Canadian and American?
Well, not all cities are equally, but nobody's been ruled in or out. And it may be that some Canadian cities deserve more than equal treatment because they can support franchises. But this notion that, you know, we should go to a place, you know, without doing any homework, go to a 30 or 40 year old building. I mean, that's just silly. That's not the real world in terms of how professional sports leagues have to run themselves. And as I've repeatedly said, if we're going to relocate or if we're going to expand, we're going to look everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Your point, I wasn't trying to dodge it. Your point about things being equal, there may be places in Canada that are more equal than others when you compare them. But everybody's going to get an open and fair chance to make their case at the appropriate time. But to suggest that we're going to do that at the expense of a city that's still putting its roots down and still trying to grow the game and where the game is making strides and inroads is silly. And so I think we're saying nothing different than I've said before, but perhaps we're articulating it a little bit differently.
877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. If you have a question for the commissioner of the National Hockey League, now's the time.
Well, are we going to take a call?
Why not?
Then let's go to Jeff in Indianapolis. Jeff, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling.
Commissioner, my question is, I've had the center ice package at home since it came out and watch at least one game and hopefully two games every night. But I live in Indianapolis, and obviously we don't really have a local team. My question is that on any given night, the St. Louis Blues, the Chicago Blackhawks, and the Columbus Blue Jackets will all be blacked out to me, even if they're playing away.
Well, you shouldn't be blacked out by all three. You may be in one of the three's broadcast territory, but it shouldn't be all three. What we're going to do is check out. You have DirecTV, or are you on cable?
It's Bright House Network here, and you know my.
Okay, we'll follow up because I was about to say when you said I'm in Indianapolis and I'm a fan, I'm going, oh, good, you don't have any blackouts. I didn't expect to hear that you were being blacked out with respect to three teams. I don't think that should be happening, and we will check into it with this cable provider you indicated and find out why this is happening. But it doesn't sound right to me intuitively. Why don't we take our next caller, and that would be Mark in Illinois. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Howdy.
Good. Gary, just want to thank you for coming on the air and talking about the game. I didn't think I'd ever see a commissioner do that. But
Well, thank you for calling in. I only get to talk about the game if you call in.
Yeah, it's a great show. My question is... Blackhawks and San Jose last week. Game's tied 1-1, and Blackhawks scored a goal. They kept after the faceoff. They played for 4.5 minutes, I believe, and the linesman had spotted a high sticking call, and they took the goal away from the Hawks. Is there something wrong with it? I know it's a rule, but is there something wrong with that? Because
I don't remember the game specifically. I may have been surfing through it, but the one thing that you said that I'm having trouble reconciling is the fact is that once the puck is dropped, the replay is over. And so either it's up to the video goal judge and the guys in Toronto to stop the game and put everything on hold until they've done a video replay. But once the puck is dropped, it doesn't matter if we wind up seeing a feed that we had never seen before. Whatever the ruling was stands and the game moves on. So my guess is that if a goal was scored, allegedly signaled, and then they were reviewing it for a high stick, they might have reversed it on the basis of the high stick call. But I can't imagine, because this is the first I'm hearing about it, that they started the game and then stopped it and pulled the goal away. That can't happen.
No, I phrased it wrong. It was a high sticking call on a player for drawing blood. It was a 4-minute penalty.
Oh, well, the penalty may have been called before the goal was scored.
Oh, I see. I thought they stopped the at the next whistle. They stopped the game and they took the goal away.
Well, if it was the linesman who made the call, now I think I know what you're saying. Okay, this is a little different.
Now
we got it. If the linesman is making the call, he has to wait till the next whistle if one of the or he's got to go get a referee to blow the whistle to stop play.
Because he doesn't signal that there's a penalty coming.
Exactly. So what must have happened here is, and now my recollection's getting refreshed, is he had the high sticking call made, but they didn't stop play, and in the intervening time the goal was scored, and that's why it was disallowed.
Okay, so even if they would have played 10 minutes
it's never happened that long, but he can go to the referee to stop play or on the next whistle. It's a rare situation where it happens. We're normally talking about seconds, maybe a minute or so, but that's about it.
All right, we're going to take our first break. Callers, stay on hold. We shall get to you when we come back. This is the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman.
This is Mark Hamburger of the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. I think it's appropriate that Martin Brodeur did that intro for two reasons. One, New Jersey native Bruce Springsteen, Spirit in the Night, and they say he's getting ready to come back.
Getting closer, taking full
Martin
speed
Brodeur,
shots.
Not Bruce Springsteen. He's back.
That's he never left.
He never left. Well, he goes away for a couple of years at a time, does a new album, plans a new tour, and then he comes back again. Shall we talk to our guest? Is he on the line? Dave Ogren, are you there?
I am here, Commissioner. How are you? Hello, Bill.
Hey, David.
How are you?
I'm terrific, thank you.
Before we get started, and we have lots of things to talk about, including hockey weekend across America, I think a lot of people who follow our game, particularly at the NHL level, have no idea what USA Hockey is or who you are and what you do. So why don't you explain what USA Hockey is?
Boy, that'll give you about a 10-minute break right now then.
I was hoping.
USA Hockey is first and foremost the national governing body for the sport in the U.S., and that is a designation handed out by the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Okay, but what does that mean in plain English, that you're the national governing body?
What that means is that we administer the sport at the amateur level from the grassroots all the way up through the organization and administration of our Olympic and national teams. It is the latter for which we are probably best known publicly, especially outside of the hockey world, but the majority of our business is focused on the more than 500,000 players in the United States who play the game anywhere from 5 or 6 years old all the way up through adulthood as members of USA Hockey.
And what do you do as executive director?
Well, I administer a terrific staff. I raise funds, which you are well aware of. We have a sizable core of volunteers that really are the boots on the ground for us across the country. And a lot of the work is coordinating with them, motivating them, helping to disseminate the information and the best practices to make this game successful at the grassroots level. And there's also the interface internationally with the IIHF and domestically with the United States Olympic Committee.
So if I have a kid who's playing in a rec league, or if I have a kid who's playing high school hockey, or if I'm in a senior league, somehow you're the governing jurisdiction for all of that?
Chances are that is true. At the high school level, it's probably the least true of those three components, because in some parts of the country, they may be members only of the National High School Federation. But our high school component is growing. Certainly, if you're playing youth hockey or adult hockey or women's hockey of any kind, the chances are that you've got a USA Hockey registration card in your wallet.
And what does that entitle me to with that nice registration card?
That entitles you to, on the obvious basis, a magazine 10 times a year for communication. But really, it's the whole network of best practices and support that begins with our coaching education program, our officiating coaching, our officiating education program, and all of the services that have been created over really several decades to help make the game as well run as it possibly can be at the amateur level.
You've been involved, and this is a what about you question, with hockey at the developmental level for a pretty long time. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you were the director of public relations for USA Hockey during the 79-80 season. What was the moment in time that you first got bit by the hockey bug?
Well, if I don't know if it was definitively before that, but it was absolutely no later than when we beat the Russians on February 22nd, almost 30 years ago. I think it was after that moment that I realized that I had the sport in my system for good. And even though, as you know, I've been away from it a couple of times, I keep coming back, and this time hopefully to stay.
Well, that's USA Hockey's good fortune. Not that you leave, that you keep coming back. So you were a part of USA Hockey for the Miracle on Ice in Lake Placid. What was that moment like, and how do you, or can you measure what the impact of those Olympic Games were on the game?
Great question, and I love to answer it. What it was like was truly surreal. It is not. It was so overwhelming. I remember saying to Walter Bush and Art Berglund and Hal Trumbull in the tunnel down by the locker room, maybe a half an hour or 40 minutes after the game, I said, you know, it may be 10 years before we realize what we were just a part of. And I think that while the memories are indelible, it also has taken on the stuff of legend as it recedes back in time. But the thing that's always impressed me, Gary, is in an era where it's so much of what have you done lately, and I use this analogy a lot, if you release a motion picture and you want it to be an Oscar candidate, you are probably not going to do that too early in the year. You want it to be closer to nomination time. Well, here was an event 7 weeks into the decade of the 80s, which 9 years and 10 months later was voted by the AP as the sporting event of the decade, and then 10 years after that was voted by USA Today in the AP as the sporting event of the 20th century. And that's an unbelievable statement as to the magnitude that event had, not just in the hockey world or the sports world, but in America.
Well, talking of movies, using your analogy, Kurt Russell played Herb Brooks. Who played you in the movie?
Nobody played me. And I'll tell you, Kurt Russell, by the way, did a heck of a job. And even his son Danny has said that.
No, it was
Herb's
great.
Herb's son Danny.
How do you compare, obviously, the impact and the notoriety from what happened at Lake Placid dwarfs what happened at Squaw Valley. But how do you measure the impact of winning the gold medal in 1960 in Squaw Valley in terms of a building block? Was that an essential ingredient of what got us to what happened in 1980?
It may have been, but the one thing where I think the 60 team, which will celebrate, obviously, its 50th anniversary next year, the one area where they've been shortchanged was the media coverage of the Winter Olympics at that time compared to 20 years later. The number of Americans who are aware that we won a gold medal in 1980 is a very significant number. Yet of those same people, I think there's a large number that don't know we won one 20 years earlier. The coverage was limited at the time. It was on CBS. Walter Cronkite and Bud Palmer were the hosts. A lot of the stuff was delayed, and just the total number of hours devoted to it was a fraction of what it was in 1980, certainly a fraction of what it is today. So I think the whole achievement took place out of the spotlight compared to what happened in Lake Placid 20 years later. But one of the things that I've always appreciated is the individuals on that 1960 team. So many of them went on to become huge contributors to the success of hockey in the United States, people like Jack Riley and Bill Cleary and Jack McCartan and others.
Interestingly enough, just as a historical note, Herb Brooks, who coached the 80 team, I believe was the last player cut from the team in 60 before the team went on to Squaw Valley to win that gold medal.
True enough. That's right.
Do you find it somewhat ironic, particularly as you're working the game at the grassroots level, that we're five decades from the gold medal win in Squaw Valley and 30 years from Lake Placid, that in many quarters people still refer to this as a new sport?
Yeah, I suppose that's true. And I think to a lot of people, certainly in parts of the country, its newness stems, quite frankly, it's been concurrent more or less with your tenure. One of the things that I have often pointed out to people is the expansion that took place around the time of your arrival as commissioner of the NHL has really had a tremendous impact on the growth of the game in the United States. I know that there are some markets where, some teams are healthier than others, but with franchises now in Nashville and Atlanta, and even though Atlanta had one some time ago, and Miami and Tampa and Dallas and Phoenix, the footprint is there that wasn't there before, and it, as the population has drifted to that part of the United States, it has really opened the game up, and from our standpoint and our participation numbers, made us much more of a 50-state game than we've ever been before.
Well, thank you for that. talk to our audience about, and we're talking to Dave Ogren, the executive director of USA Hockey, Hockey Weekend Across America. Tell our listeners from your perspective what it's all about and how they should be getting involved.
Well, this is an event that we started a year ago this time with a lot of help from you and from the NHL teams. The whole purpose is to celebrate the game of hockey nationwide, to put a spotlight on the sport, and especially to expose it to new audiences. So this weekend, Hockey Weekend Across America, there's a theme for each day, which people in various parts of the country are taking advantage of and activating. Tomorrow is Wear Your Favorite Hockey Jersey Day, so I'll be asking you later what jersey you're going to wear to work. On Saturday, it's Bring a Friend to the Rink Day, which is a terrific growth initiative. You can just imagine what would happen to our sport if everybody who's playing it today got somebody else new to register. It would really be transformational. And then on Sunday, it's Celebrate Local Hockey Heroes Day. And we've got great support from Reebok, from Liberty Mutual, from the NHL, from ShopUSAHockey.com behind all these efforts. So we've had a multimedia platform that includes the NHL Network to push a lot of this stuff out, and a lot of great individual events in individual markets happening. And it's not just traditional ice hockey. It's floor hockey. It's sled hockey. It's the diversity program with the Hockey in the Hood event in Detroit. It is the sort of thing which I think in literally 13 months or 12 months has really taken hold, and we're looking forward to how we can continue to use this with you and all of our other partners and stakeholders in the future to grow participation in the sport.
Another event that people in the United States in particular don't know a lot about in Canada, it's Legion, because the following of this event has made it into one of the great annual events in not just in our game, but in all sports, and that's the World Junior Tournament. Would you talk a little bit, for people who don't know about it, what the World Junior Tournament is and the fact that it's going to be in the United States in Buffalo in 2011, and what's the significance of that?
Well, the World Junior Championship, as you rightly point out, is just an enormous deal in Canada. The country stops. The buildings are sold out. NHL-sized crowds filling the house in cities like Vancouver and Ottawa. It has become a national holiday almost for 10 or 12 days around the end of the year and into the new one. It is a ideal preview of the stars that are right on the cusp of going into the NHL. Players under the age of 20, so these are guys that have been drafted or in some cases will be drafted in the upcoming draft, such as this June in Montreal. It is literally tomorrow's stars, not stars for 10 years down the road, but the players that people are going to be hearing about from that point on. It's an event in which that has taken on much more significance and importance, I think, in terms of the national pride that various countries feel, especially Canada and the United States. And we're looking forward, in cooperation with the Buffalo Sabres, to having it in Buffalo a little less than 2 years from now. And we hope that that is something that we will be able to use to not only better educate the American public about just what junior hockey at this level is, but also really use it on the ground in upstate New York as a catalyst to grow more participation in the sport.
Well, speaking of junior hockey, there's this thing called the National Development Team that USA Hockey has put together, and I don't think everybody really knows what it is, what it does, and who gets selected. Do you want to talk about that for a couple of seconds?
Sure. A dozen years ago, we decided that we needed to take some proactive steps to improve our performance at the international level and also to produce more high-performance American players, many of whom we hoped would end up migrating and become players in the NHL and stars in the NHL. And this is two standing teams that reside in Ann Arbor, Michigan, are billeted with local families, attend the Ann Arbor public school system, and we have an under-18 team and an under-17 team, 22 or 23 players on each one from around the country, and these are players who are recruited, are selected from a much larger number, who play a very, very intense schedule of games against international competition, domestic junior competition, university competition, generally on the ice, testing themselves against older players. But they are training every day, and it is a focus on development far more than on wins and losses. And it is a program that we take a great deal of pride in, not just in the on-ice performance, but in the historical grade point average of the kids that go there. We have an astounding batting average in terms of these players earning either NCAA college scholarships. In some instances, they may go and spend a year in the U.S. Hockey League or in the CHL. And there are some instances where they've taken virtually a direct jump to the NHL. So it's really a hothouse, if you will, for some of the best American hockey talent, and it's really started to pay dividends for us.
You've had a fair amount of experience dealing with the U.S. Olympic Committee. Would you give our listeners a little briefing as to what's involved in getting a country and its teams ready for the Olympics since Vancouver's a year away?
Well, the work, quite honestly, is mainly done by the sport organization or the national governing body, but it is the USOC that authorizes us to go and does really all of the back of house once we get there. It's the visas, it's the accommodations, it's making sure that the things that the host city is going to do for housing and food and transportation are all at a standard that will allow our athletes to perform at a maximum capacity. And throughout the quadrennial period, throughout the 4 years when the Olympics themselves are not always in the forefront, the USOC is working very hard, especially to promote the game and to raise dollars to help our teams go. All of those teams are our team until they check into the village, at which point they are no longer ours. They are the U.S. Olympic Committee's team.
And is that something that works smoothly, or is at some point times a point of contention, such as the uniform dispute going on with the Canadian hockey team and the Canadian Olympic Committee?
Bob has an issue with that, which is happily one that does. Our situation is not completely analogous because of the design that is used. It is an issue which occasionally gets discussion. It has not historically ever become a real problem for us. At the end of the day, while there are certain standards the USOC insists upon maintaining, there are certain commercial obligations that they don't want infringed upon. Their goal is to make sure that the organizations that put these teams together, and especially the teams and the individual athletes, can perform at the highest level with the fewest distractions when they get to the games. And over time, there's so much experience that has taken place that there's a lot that goes on before we get there, but once we get there, it usually goes exceedingly well.
I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to let you go, and we're talking to Dave Ogren, the executive director of USA Hockey. So look into your crystal ball, and what's the future of USA Hockey and hockey in the United States look like 5-10 years from now?
Well, I think it's very bright. One of the governors that we have on our sport is that we're so facilities dependent, obviously. And if there is not an ice facility in reasonable proximity to where you live, you are probably not going to become a player. That is something about which there is a very limited amount that we can do. However, I think that where we're going in this country in terms of the training of our athletes, the recruitment of youngsters to play the game, better and better operation and administration of programs so that when people come to the game, they stay in it longer. And especially now the making the game attractive and successfully recruiting so many female players and adult players are all things that are going to allow, I think, our sport and our organization to be much larger and more successful and more popular in the future.
David, thank you for joining us. Good luck getting ready for the weekend, for next year's Olympics, and for all the things you do, and happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Gary. We'll see you soon.
Dave Ogren, interesting guy. We didn't even get a chance to talk to him, but the U.S. Pond Hockey Championship that's going to be part of Hockey Weekend across America, Dollar Lake, Eagle River, Wisconsin. That would be a great place to be to see the Pond Hockey Championship. We're going to get back to the calls. Now is the time to jump on board, 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. Back with the NHL Hour after this.
With the Chicago Blackhawks, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now, back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everyone.
All right, you contemporized your request
actually,
list.
Actually, you cut me off because I was about to say you had this look of shock on your face when Dave Matthews Band came up. Because it was way too contemporary for you.
Oh, it was too contemporary for you. That's why I had that shocked look. Nothing's too contemporary when it comes to the questions that we want to answer before we get out of here. And we got about 12 minutes to go. 877-645-6696 is the number to call.
What was that number?
877-645-6696. And if you order now, we'll include this Ginsu knife, even makes Julian fries.
That was my setup for you to do that. John on Long Island, you've been holding for 40 minutes. I apologize, and you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
I never mind holding for you guys because, Commissioner Bettman, you are by far the best commissioner in North America for doing this, and Billy's the only person who ever played for the Flyers I can stand.
Wow.
So it's never a problem waiting for you guys.
Well, thank you for that, although you need to tell people you're not related to either of us.
Oh, no, I'm not. I live on Long Island, and the Flyers are the only team I truly, truly disdain. So, you know, but Billy we make an exception for because he's turned into a, you know, probably the second best announcer in all of hockey behind, you know, Doc Emmerich.
I'm not worthy. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate
Commissioner, I'm a regular listener to hockey this morning, and they've been talking all week about the concussion summit. And I was wondering what your take is on the recommendations from the concussion summit, because obviously some of the things they're recommending just aren't feasible at the pro level. But are you guys looking into some of their recommendations to see what can and can't work for you?
Well, interestingly enough, I think even the concussion summit acknowledged that their recommendations was more of a wish list of, you know, here are a multitude of things you could do. What we have is our own concussion working group. We were actually honored by the National Association of Neuropsychologists for our work, which was pretty cutting edge, by being the first sports league in conjunction with the Players Association to do baseline neurological testing to determine when players should be coming back from concussions and coming up with a standard for evaluating and treating concussions. We take it extremely seriously. We're in the process of now going back over the last few years of concussions to try and determine by looking at video what exactly causes a concussion. You know, to say eliminate fighting, that'll end concussions. I'm not sure that fighting is what's causing concussions. More often than not, I'm virtually certain that it's a hit either with the elbow or the shoulder directly to the head. So we understand their recommendations, but I think they were more generic than specific, and a little ivory tower as opposed to realistic. Although we had representatives there, we are taking into account their work, but we're using our own concussion working group to look at what we need to be doing moving forward to reduce concussions, the incidence of them, and when they occur, to make sure that they're being appropriately diagnosed and that the players are being appropriately treated. Very important stuff. It's a good question. Dan in Idaho, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM and Sirius, 204 and 208.
All right. Hey, Bill. Hey, Gary. Nice to talk to you guys.
Good talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Hey, I just had a question about some preseason. I'm here in Idaho, Boise, we have the Idaho Steelheads. It's an ETHL league. They're affiliated with the Dallas Stars, actually. And just wanted your thoughts on some preseason games to the smaller markets, maybe with the affiliates or that sort of thing.
Well, I think it generally comes down to arena size and the willingness of a promoter to put on a game in what is a non-NHL market. Typically, when our teams play exhibition games out of market, they're put on by promoters who believe that there's an arena and a place that doesn't traditionally get our game that would like to have a game, and that the promoter thinks they can sell out and not lose money on and hopefully make some money on. I'm not familiar with the size of the rink in Boise as to whether or not it would make sense, but if there's a good size rink and a promoter, I'm sure one of our teams is always looking for an extra exhibition game.
Yeah, it's seats about 5,000 people.
That's probably a little small. That's typically, okay, when we go to a rink that size, we've done that in Canada as part of the Kraft Hockeyville promotions, where they run this contest every year in Canada, sponsored by Kraft, where the most passionate community for hockey in the country actually wins a preseason game in its local rink. And we've been in Salmon River, and we've been in North Bay, Ontario. We've been in rinks of 2,000-3,000, but that's rather unique. That's not typically where we play our preseason games. Let's go to our next caller, which is Eric in Chicago. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM, Sirius, 204, 208.
Respectively.
Or something like that.
Commissioner, Mr. Clement, how are you guys today?
Good. Were you at the Winter Classic?
I was not. I was actually down in Florida during that period of time. A little bit warmer down there. My question to you is concerning equipment. And I think, Bill, you're actually probably someone who could speak to this as well. During the days where you played, you guys were using, wooden sticks. You weren't using composite materials. You weren't using a whole lot of fiberglass. And as a result, I think you saw a lot less stick breaks during critical moments during the game. How many times have we seen guys trying to clear the puck, or guys are trying to keep a puck in at the blue line, trying to take a slap shot? And so many instances, the stick breaks, and it basically causes turnovers. And I'm wondering at what point the league turns around and says, the equipment manufacturers, unless we can get a little more consistency in materials, we're not going to be using these sticks. Because I think it's costing in terms of quality of play.
First of all, Eric, you're right. There, I don't keep track, but when I played, when wooden sticks were used, there didn't seem to be nearly as many breaking.
But by the way, you're absolutely right, and it drives me crazy when you see somebody winding up to take a slap shot on a one timer, and the stick snaps, and instead of having a scoring chance, the play breaks down, the puck's out of the zone. You see it a lot on power plays too.
Or a wrist shot.
It's just crazy. The issue of the sticks and what the players use and how they pick their own equipment, that's something that we need to do in conjunction with the Players Association. Putting aside the fact that the composite sticks are expensive and they break a lot, the artistry of the game, I think, has been impacted by how brittle they tend to be. Now, there are a lot of players who will say that they're getting more on the puck by using these composite
when
sticks.
When they don't break. And they are.
And they are. But you know what? The guys, Al McInnes once said to me, and he played, I believe, with a wooden stick until the end.
Kept
he,
winning the hardest he, shot he, competition with wood.
And he, for him, it made no difference. And he stayed with a wooden stick. But if you're a player who doesn't have an Al McInnes-type shot, it gives you a little bit more on it. And I think that that's something that players who feel they need a little bit more on it want to use.
Oh, but it's one of the great questions, though. Teams invest literally hundreds of thousands of dollars now. That's what a stick budget is compared to pennies years ago. And it's hard for the players to say to the players, you can't use that stick. That can't happen. So I hope something can be done with the Players Association. I mean, I know there's a lot more zip on the puck, but at some point, you're right, it takes away from the game.
Why don't we talk to Frank on Long Island? You're on with Bill and Gary. How are you?
Good. I'd like to talk to you guys about the overtime, the way the point system is set up.
Okay.
I think that it would be better off. You know, you go four for overtime for 5 minutes. Why wouldn't you try to go 3-on-3 for another five? Okay. And if you turn around, if you lose in that overtime, you don't get any points.
Well, the answer to both points that you've made, which are good points and which have been discussed by the general managers at the competition committee, evolve around two points. One, the notion of the guaranteed point going to a team that makes it into overtime was a hope that the teams would open it up. We were coming out of the era where teams were playing for ties and you wouldn't see much scoring in the last 5 minutes of regulation, and even in overtime, teams would just want to hang on to not lose the game and get a point. The purpose of the guaranteed point was to open it up, and we think the overtime 4-on-4 and now with the shootout on top of it has worked very well, has been very entertaining, and has been extremely well received. The second point, which was, 3-on-3, the ice, the condition of the ice at that point, you will have been playing 25 minutes on the surface.
If you add it on to the five minutes,
and at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night to bring out the Zambonis and flood the ice again and take another 12-minute break or even a 6 or 8 minute break, we think it would disrupt the flow of the game. We kind of like what we have. We know that there's been a lot of discussion raising the points that you've just raised, talking about whether or not it should be a 3-2-1 system. And these are all good discussions to continue to have, but we think what we have has been working pretty well.
Has the model been floated of playing half of the 5 minutes and then at the soonest whistle, the earliest whistle, after that going to 3-on-3? Because last night, the Anaheim-Calgary game was decided 3-on-3 because a couple of guys got into a Y-I-Yada. And then there were coincidental minors. And the 3-on-3 was just dynamic. So even if it was the last minute of that five-minute window.
Well, we even had the discussion once about, you blow a horn, and each team has 5 seconds to get a player off the ice so you don't disrupt the flow of play.
Go back to rec league hockey.
Yeah, well, but that's the point. We don't want to go to rec league hockey. What we have is pretty good, but we're constantly self-evaluating and self-critiquing. Why don't we go to Marv in Jupiter, Florida?
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Good. I'm fine. I'm a Long Islander and a South Floridian. And so I see the best arena in hockey and the worst arena in hockey. Hopefully, soon I'll see two of the best arenas in hockey.
That's a very good thought for the Islanders. The Bank Atlantic Center in Sunrise is absolutely terrific, state-of-the-art first class, and the Nassau Coliseum isn't. And
right.
The Islanders need a new building desperately.
The other thing is really for Bill, if I could.
Yeah.
I watched all the review of the replays at night on NHL on the Fly. I as a lover of Foster Hewitt and Danny Gallivan, the goal was the best thing to hear. Now all I hear are analysts talking over things in offensive zones, and the play-by-play guy gets shut out. What do you think of that?
I think we need to shut up. You know that, Marv? I think you're absolutely right.
And on that note, you're supposed to sign off because we're out of time. Shutting up.
That's why I went with the shutting up theme. And by the way, before you feel all contemporary, that Dave Matthews song is 15 years old.
That's contemporary by the standards under which I've been selecting music.
We're going to have to go to 2008 for the next song request. That will have to happen next week because that winds up the NHL Hour. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for calling us with all your questions, and we'll be back next week on the NHL Hour. at 4 Eastern. Have a great week of hockey, everybody.
This is NHL Radio.